The Fan on Demand.
It's hour three of three for this Monday, the 14th of July. This is Primetime Sports. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk show on the Sportsnet radio and television networks coast to coast. Bob McCown and the coach, Butch Carter, in our Toronto studios. Gabby Boudreau, Bruce Boudreau, head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, will join us in a little bit. They added a couple of interesting pieces to an already solid lineup. Ryan Kesler, Danny Heatley become Ducks next year, and Boudreau will join us in a bit to talk about it. Butch and I were chatting about at the top of the show about LeBron James going back to Cleveland, and that story is pretty simplistic. We understand what happened, how it happened. Now we start focusing in on what is the next shoe to drop in Cleveland. And I think Butch and I both agree there's something going to happen here, and is Wiggins the most likely guy to be moved? Here's our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Mr. Ryan, how are you?
Well, is not the front office saying over our dead body on moving Wiggins? Yeah, I mean, if they're talking about Love, then you would think Wiggins would have to be the chief instrument to obtain Love. But they insist right now publicly that Wiggins isn't going anywhere, so I don't know how they can make any major move that doesn't involve Wiggins.
Well, I mean, there's other guys that you can move without question. Whether you know, is Wiggins for Love? I mean, I know Butch hates that idea. Don't you? You don't even like that even a little bit, do you?
I mean, it's not the long-term solution. I mean, Love, I believe, has a deal with the Lakers. That deal's been done 6-8 months. I mean, that's how it is. Love is headed back to California, and that's what it was set up to be. And just because LeBron has got to talk him to go to Cleveland over L.A., what would you do?
Duh.
I mean, Bob, you know how it works. I mean,
you can sell him, well, but you can sell him cost of living. How about that?
Okay.
Well, if that's the case, and, you know, I certainly cannot contradict you, then so be it. And it makes perfect sense for Love. And we know he's a West Coast guy, not a California guy. He's an Oregon guy, but we know that he went to school at UCLA. So, okay, fine. Meanwhile, I don't know what that means for the Cavaliers, back to the original question. They need to replenish. They need to restock or bulk up, I guess would be a better word, the roster, of course. And if they're going to actually be a contender and not just an Eastern, you know, annoyance, if you will.
I think the change in Cleveland is that it's become a now proposition with LeBron there. It's not a bunch of young kids and we'll grow together.
Right.
And you know, we got Kyrie Irving, we can do this and we can, you know, work our way up the totem pole slowly. No, you're at the top of the totem pole now. You got to surround LeBron with at least one other piece that gives him a chance.
So. Although I'm always amused by Las Vegas and the idea that two sports books that I saw listed the Cavaliers as championship favorites, which is just they have forgotten that the West exists.
Well, the only thing I would say to that, Mr. Ryan, is that the sports books react to the likelihood of what the public will do.
Right. Well, I'm amazed that the public would be that gullible, really, if they think of it. I mean, obviously, they think they are. I mean, they're improved. They're going to be a force. They're going to win 50. You know, I guess. You know, they're going to be tough to beat. They're going to be exciting. They're going to bring life back to the Quicken Loans Arena. That's fine. But to think that they're in a class with maybe five, maybe seven Western teams, I'm not going there.
I totally agree with him. He's right on with that. But the way the book works is the book is planning on money coming in one side, and then they'll bounce it back.
Right. I mean, the day that LeBron signs, they lower the odds to 3-1 on the Cavaliers. That's because there isn't a single person that's going to bet on any other team in the future book on the day LeBron signs. They're only going to bet on the Cavaliers, and the book knows that. And eventually, that number will go back up to 4-1 or 5-1 or 6-1 or, well, depending upon what else they do. And I mean, if they can pull off a Houdini and go and get another significant piece, but they need a significant piece.
They do. And so just going back to we all agree on that. And now we can go back to the reality of where do they fit into the overall big picture. And I think in the East, I still like Chicago. Now, I'm betting on Rose returning to about 90% at least of his old self. And I'm thrilled about the Gasol thing because I am the regional president of the Pau Gasol fan club. And I am. I mean, I'm claiming that title for myself. And, I mean, I've been slobbering over this guy for 5-6 years now. I love this guy. And I love his game. Now they have the most intelligent two big men playing together in the league. I mean, the tandem of Noah and Gasol certainly has got my pulse racing, and they have Thibodeau, and they're going to defend, and I think that they are the favorites in the East.
But Bob, you have to consider Powell does not like the practice, and that does not go over very well.
Don't you think there's been some due diligence done in that regard?
Yeah,
talking to him and having a meeting of the minds, and I just would think so. It's an imperfect world. We all know that. But
of course,
I'm going to just go. But I mean, I have to admit, and upfront, I'm such a Noah fan and I'm a Gasol fan. I mean, they're like two of my three or four favorite players in the contemporary NBA, and now they're going to play next to each other. Perhaps I'm getting a bit giddy here. I'll admit it.
What is interesting, I think, and one of the few things that's actually interesting about the LeBron signing, I mean, it's interesting in a generic sense, but is he took a 2-year deal for 42 and change rather than a longer term deal. And some would suggest, raise a Spocky an eyebrow and say, hey, what the hell's going on there? Is he going there just to see what's going to happen? Or isn't this as much about a new television contract and a significantly increased cap that would allow LeBron to negotiate more money 2 years from now? Don't you think that's more of what
the
it's about?
Is undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. And that's the working premise that we're all going to operate on, is that that's the reason for that. LeBron eventually probably would like to get paid commensurate with his true worth, which he is not. Right now, I mean, every economist that knows anything about the NBA and sports economics will tell you that LeBron is selling himself cheaply, and somewhere down the road he'd like to get paid.
Now, if he'd signed a 1-year contract, Butch, let me ask you this because you know all about this. Teams can sign their own free agents at a premium, correct?
Yeah, but it's not the issue. Is there's a cap on the premium? See, that's the problem. I felt LeBron was sitting in Miami saying, whatever I sign, Bosch is going to be $1 million below me. That ain't right.
Mm-mm.
Right? I think that ended up being the problem.
No, so, I'm wondering, if he goes to Cleveland and signs a 1-year deal, can't he then take that 1-year deal, Cleveland give him a second 1-year deal with a home team premium?
But basically, that's what he did. He got the max dollars he could get with an option on the second year. See, what I believe, what I believe that he did was that he said, we left because there was a distrust on player movement. That last time you guys gave me a supporting cast with a guy named Booby, right? And that cannot happen this time. So let's work through that. And if I don't like it, then I have the right to opt out. Right?
Right.
So... But he also did, worst case scenario, if he got injured, he put $44 million in the bank. Right?
So
Right? He gave himself a $22 million insurance policy.
No, I got that. Yeah.
Right? So I think it's really an issue of trust. I think there is a long-term deal because my sources have always said that the owner admitted that he did not understand how the organization should run. And I also know that he tried very hard to get a former player, successful Hall of Fame player, all right, with the last name begins with a D, to move into his organization because he believes that he should have his GM and then have a very successful player that knows the talent over top.
Mm.
And I think that's all a part of this legacy in which they're doing.
So 15, give or take, prospective coaches said no to Cleveland And they wind up getting a guy from Europe who has, who may be a very fine coach, we don't know, but has relatively no experience in North America and certainly no experience in the National Basketball Association. And all of a sudden, he wins the lottery. He's going to be coaching LeBron James. What do you make of the significance of that, Mr. Ryan? Is that a factor here?
It could conceivably be. This is like a very outside the box choice. He has a unique resume. He has never coached in America for one second, not even in junior high school. But he has an extensive and impressive resume of 22 years worth of Europe and Asia, although Israel plays in the European championships. But anyway, it's a very impressive resume. It includes Olympics, world championships. He's familiar with the highest level of basketball, having coached against the Americans at times. And it's an impressive resume, but certainly it's an intriguing choice at the very least. And some people will say a questionable one, because I don't care. I say this, and let's see if Butch would agree to this. The thing about the NBA is that you can be told, or you can observe from the outside about the season-long rhythm of the thing from the exhibitions and from the beginning of the season. And then, but until you get to February and you've got eight guys who can practice because of injuries, and you've played the four games in the five nights, and you've had the crazy ending games that drive you crazy, maybe even a happy one here and there, but the vagaries of the league, you must experience this to have a sense of how this league, what's all about. This is what Brad Stevens had the good fortune to experience last year while never having 1 second's pressure to win, which is an extraordinarily rare circumstance that Dave Blatt will not have. He will have to experience all these new things while being asked or expected to win. And he's got a learning curve. There's no question about all that European experience is not worth, you know, squat in terms of the living through the NBA experience. Do I misspeak, Butch?
No, you're exactly on point. He is been put in a pressure cooker. They try to relieve some of the pressure by adding Tyronn Lue, but the reality is that he is not developing an all-star. He is getting the most valuable player in basketball in the world. And so quickly those two have to get on the same page, or Blatt has to get on. Blatt basically has to become Eric Spoelstra. He has to become an outstanding manager and grow his X's and O's while going through the tribulations of a season.
I mean, I guess the question becomes, how much did Spoelstra coach that Miami team, and how much did he, as Butch said, just manage it? Just, you know, pull a few strings here and there, but basically let these guys play. And will this guy, Blatt, be able to do that in Cleveland?
It's not the exact same personnel circumstance. Yes, you've got
LeBron. Well, no, you're right.
And then you draw the line, but the thing in Miami was that there were, when you added Ray Allen, you had four veteran guys, and not to mention then you throw in more veteran guys, Haslam, Birdman. I mean, they had veterans piled upon veterans so that you could kind of, just manage. But you don't have that situation in Cleveland, so it's not an analogous situation.
Yeah, because Blatt, what if they go through and lose 5 out of 7, 6 out of 8? All right, he's going to be under so much scrutiny in Spoelstra, when he was earning his way into the position, he failed them in the first final. Dallas went zone, and he had no answer for their zone defense. He basically confused them. He could not make any adjustments on the fly because he had never seen a zone. And this is what you always have to remember, all right? One of the biggest things that I've always done, if you take a guy who's only been in the NBA, run one section of zone at him because he's never coached against it and has never played against it. So most of the time you will confuse him. And Dallas got away with it in the playoff situation, which you have a couple days in between to adjust. Spoelstra never could make the adjustment. I still believe that championship Miami should have won, and it only won it because they confused them with that zone. So then he did a very good job. He changed the offense, went more to a random screen and roll, allowed his players to make more decisions. And then this past year, I think Eric Spoelstra and what Miami Heat did was outstanding, because his big three players were more efficient than the prior 3 years offensively. Shooting field goal percentage, making shots, they were more efficient which shows that they got in the gym and they did the right work for the right things. And so, Bob, I think David Black, as you said, the ups and downs of a normal season, and if he gets into a losing situation, injuries, if they continue with their history of injuries, it'll be a little tougher for him.
Well, but you got a unique dichotomy here, as I think Bob suggested. I mean, on one hand, you've got probably the greatest player in the game in LeBron, who doesn't need to be coached, and you've got a whole whack of kids who need a lot of coaching and are going to need a lot of help.
I think Blatt will provide that to the young kids. I think his background in Europe, where they have to develop players. Remember, Europe has, you know, as we discussed prior, Europe has where they protect the nationals and you have two or three foreigners.
Yeah, right.
Right? So there's a lot more development coaching done. So I think he'll do a really good job with that. I just think when he goes out west, makes a West Coast trip and loses 5 out of 6. Right? That's when it gets tough.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned, his zone thing. He won't have a problem with that because obviously
they play a lot there.
Right.
And the second thing is, I like hearing him say he doesn't have a system. You know, he coaches the game of basketball a la the Coach K kind of theory, which is that he doesn't have a system. He teaches basketball. I do like to hear that.
Quickly, before we let you go, I'm intrigued by your take on this. Apparently, Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft have both been interviewed in the Aaron Hernandez murder case. Do you have any sense, any understanding as to whether they would be called at any point in a projected trial to testify?
I do not. The defense has requested all this data from the Patriots, and much of it they were reluctant to give over, but they had to do. They were able to withhold some scouting reports, which is from his collegiate days. Anyway, no, I do not. I don't have anything. I just learned just half an hour ago about this, and so I don't have anything remotely resembling an informed opinion.
Are you surprised by this at all when you heard the news? I mean, I my first reaction was, oh, I guess that makes some sense. But then I thought, well, I wonder what is their actual relationship there?
I mean, I don't know. Just trying to, I guess they're, I think it's a Hail Mary. I mean, I think that, you know, it's hard to believe that the charges, as we hear them, aren't accurate. But I'll just put it that way. But it is interesting. And, the thing is, I just go back to this, and this is not answering your question, but I'd love to hear from a player sooner or later to tell us what it was like when they discovered the charges and thought about the fact that they spent the entire season 2 years ago in the company of someone who may have murdered as many as 3 people, interacted on a daily basis and all the normal human interaction of a locker room and a social circumstance. And that would creep me out. But so far, they've been mum on that. No one has spoken to that. I just find that interesting.
Always good of you to take time for us. Thank you, Mr. Ryan.
Okay, my pleasure.
Talk to you next week.
Take care, Bob.
Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Any thoughts on that? I mean, it's difficult to separate sport from an athlete being charged like this.
All the reports on Hernandez prior to him enrolling in the University of Florida were very bad.
Well, trouble seemed to follow him wherever he went in various degrees. Now, you know, you can't even, it's a leap, too. I mean, a lot of athletes, a lot of young people get into trouble for various things.
Yes.
They don't wind up killing people.
Correct.
So you got to be careful in attaching, you know, a resume that includes a lot of troubles with a guy who's a murderer. But, and on the other hand, too, I mean, some have suggested, you know, how could the Patriots not realize there was something wrong with this guy? Well, sport is there's littered with teams that take chances on guys that have had social problems.
And there have also been guys who are so talented that the team, all right, found...
Well, they get blinded by it.
That's correct. They found some way to balance out. We'll be able to manage him. This is what we're going to put in place. But in all societies, there are people who attempt to harm people, and he has been charged. That's the reality of what we're talking about.
We'll keep an eye on that story over the coming weeks. Here's one of our favorite people. He's the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. Bruce Boudreau is with us. Hello, Gabby. How are you?
Bob, I'm fine. How are you tonight?
Excellent. Before we get to the future, even the present, let's take a minute in the past. I haven't talked to you since the Los Angeles Kings won the Stanley Cup. Is that like the worst scenario possible for you? Like, is that, I mean,
you know,
anybody but the Kings?
It's one way it's really bad because, quite frankly, the Kings fans are everywhere in Southern California, and they let us know it every time they see us. And,
right.
So that's pretty irritating every time you see them. But on the other hand, you sit there and you go, okay, we lost in seven games to the Stanley Cup champion. It's easy to go tell the players that we're really close and, you know, not to lose their focus or whatever, and not, you know, it's disappointing to lose, but we're that close and just to keep going.
You had a good season. You had a great regular season. You looked like you were primed for this postseason. And while you had some success in the postseason, I think you would acknowledge it had moments. It was a struggle. Was it surprising to you that it was a struggle?
No. I mean, you know, whether we like it or not, we always say, geez, I don't want to play this team in the first round. I don't want to play that team. And you don't admit it publicly, but privately you're thinking these things. And Dallas was the team that we didn't want to play because they'd beaten us two out of three times during the season. And we knew they could really skate and that they'd have a lot of confidence. I thought we played better than them, but it was a really tough series. The Kings series, we thought we were going to win. I mean, we were 4-0-1 against them in the regular season. And, you know, I think one of the things that really hurt us was when they tied it up with 7 seconds to go in game one. I think that was it took us the whole next game to get over it. And then we won two in their building and game five back in our building. And I thought we were going to get it done. But as you could tell, their resilience for that team when their backs were against the wall, you could tell they've been champions before.
Coach, a couple questions. You added two really good pieces. But in your mind, I mean, coaches who get that close, are you done? Are you hoping, you know, that to keep moving, there's another piece you want to add?
Well, I think, we're probably done right now. But that doesn't mean we can't add during the season. You know, like I think right now we have 8 defensemen on one-way contracts and 14 forwards 13 forwards on one way and another young player that's really good that would be hard to keep out of the NHL. So I think if there's anything that we'd be doing right now, it might be subtracting. But I don't know what they're thinking. I'm in Ontario right now, so I don't know what's going on back in Anaheim. But I think with the things we did with getting Kessler and Nate Thompson, I thought were two really good pickups. Kessler, I've never coached a team that has had a 1-2 center punch like this, so it's going to be interesting to coach that team. And I think our young guys matured enough that they're looking for prime time, even with Solani and Koivu basically retiring.
Yeah, but I thought the adding the two pieces was a great positive message to send to the team after what you'd gone through, especially winning the Pacific and getting back in the groove right in training camp.
Absolutely. I mean, those were great, great pickups, and I think it made our team better. I mean, I'm sure we wouldn't have done it. Bob wouldn't have done it if he didn't think this was going to make our team a better team. I mean, we gave up some good pieces in Bonino and Perreault, but I think we definitely made ourselves a bigger and stronger and better team, more playoff ready than we were a year ago.
I think everybody knows what you're getting in Kessler and can visualize his potential impact in the lineup. If you acquired Danny Heatley 8 years ago, I think we all would have gone, wow. What do you do with a 33-year-old Danny Heatley who has demonstrated signs that he can't be the guy that he once was and was for a considerable period of time offensively? How do you massage the best out of him?
Well, I mean, I think
one thing. I mean, for the first time in an awful lot of years, he's not making a lot of money by NHL standards.
Right.
And if he wants to continue playing, his motivation should be at an all-time high. Thinking of the idea that he might be starting playing with Getzlaff and Perry would make me be want to be in the best shape of my life, because it could be the way to get another 5-year contract with a lot of money to end his career if he does what he's supposed to do. I think, on the other hand, that it was a very cheap gamble. You know, I mean, if it doesn't work out, I don't think it cost Bob a lot of money. But we think, I've talked to him a couple times now on the phone, and he's definitely sounds like he can't wait to play. I mean, I know all players talk like that, but
yeah.
I thought his playoffs was the best part of his year. And if that's the kind of guy we get, I think we're going to be fine with him. I mean, we had Dustin Penner last year. He did extremely well on that line. So I think Danny Heatley could do the same thing.
Gabby, are you, when you get a guy like Heatley, do you mentally slot him somewhere in your lineup? I mean, at this point in his career, based upon his stats last year in Minnesota, he looks to me like a third-line guy, maybe a fourth-line guy. Or do you think maybe you start him there and see what happens? Or am I reading you correctly that you might put him up front?
I might. I mean, his whole life, he's been a scorer and a dynamic scorer.
That's true.
And I believe that you put people in positions to succeed. And a lot of times you put a player like Danny Heatley on the third or fourth line, he's going to play like a third or fourth liner.
Mm-hmm.
But you give him the opportunity and the ball and say, here, let's see what you got. And it won't take long to find out whether he's got it or he doesn't. I mean, because that would be the biggest, if somebody gave me that opportunity when I was playing, I definitely would have taken advantage of it.
Well, who do you put with Kessler? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I think we've got a multitude of guys that we could put, you know, Cogliano, Silverberg, and Kessler would be a line that could skate as well as anybody in the league. They can check and score. I mean, it would be, I think, a perfect combination. I don't know if that's the way it'll end up, but it sounds like a pretty good line.
Yeah.
When I've gone over it in my head.
So you're going to have two lines, arguably as good as any two lines in the National Hockey League. And I'm not asking you for confirmation of that. Let me just say that that's the case. I wonder how cognizant you are even now of the danger of subtly, maybe not deliberately, using those two lines too much during the regular season. Do you have to keep reminding yourself, it's a long grind, I got probably 100 games I want to play this year, these 82 have some import, but the 28 or 18 or whatever I play after that are a lot more important? I mean, that's got to play in your head.
You know, Bob, normally I agree with you, but I'm not going to agree with you this time, because anybody that knows me knows I play four lines. If you look at the
right.
ice times of Corey Perry, it was 18 minutes all last year. And one of the reasons we led the league in goals was because all four lines contributed. And I firmly believe we have to have the same thing this year, is we have to have everybody contributing. What it does do is it makes it easier for me to match lines with the strength of Ryan Kessler. And I'm taking nothing away from Bonino, Koivu, or Perreault, but they were small centers. Now in the big Western Conference, I can put Getzlaff or Kessler, I feel, against any line and have the other line still being able to play against who we want to choose to play against.
Well, listen,
sense?
Sure, it does. It makes 100% sense.
Okay. All right.
I'm just, you know, my only thought was, you know, that is there that temptation out there? And I know you play four lines, but I was at that temptation out there. I was like, you know, I got these horses. You know, sometimes you want to ride those horses. In any of, I know you're smart. I know you're smarter than that.
But if we're down 3-1, 4-1,
yeah, here we go.
You might have to ride them a little bit.
Well, that's right.
I'm hoping that doesn't happen too often.
Are you up for the entire summer? Are you staying in Ontario for the entire summer?
I am here now. You're old enough to remember that old Dick Van Dyke thing when Laura was going to give birth, and he's got the phone on his chest and a hat, and he's waiting. And my daughter's about to give birth any day now, so I'm sort of just waiting for the call to go to Ottawa. But I'm up here for the rest of the summer with the hockey school. So I just arrived today, so I'm happy to be home.
Have you had the golf clubs out? I mean, I know you get to play. You can play every day if you want in Anaheim, but...
Yeah, well, I don't, but...
I know you don't.
If my daughter doesn't have the baby, I've got a 10 o'clock tee-off time at the National.
Answer that question in a roundabout way. So the answer is yeah.
Yeah, I've told her to hold it. She's not buying that, though.
Listen, let's try and get out, okay?
I'll love to. Anytime you want to give me a call to go out, I'll play with you.
Well, we'll do.
You're paying.
Oh, yeah, fine. Yeah, because you're poverty-stricken, Boudreaux. Yeah. No. All right, if that's what it takes, happy to help out. I'll pay my fair share. Yeah. Well, I know you will because we're going to play for something. Listen, have a great summer. We'll talk. We'll get together.
All right, thanks a lot, pal. Thanks, Butch.
Take care, Coach.
Bruce Boudreaux, the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, one of my favorite all-time people. Well, he looks like he's loaded. He looks like he's got all the guns he needs. I mean, that was a team that was as good as them. You can make the argument they were every bit as good. I mean, there were three or four teams you can make that argument of over the course of the regular season, but I really liked Anaheim's chances.
Well, he won the Pacific, which is extremely important. And if you look at who else out west has added significant piece, I'd have to say it probably only is Dallas.
Yeah, and they're not a bad hockey team by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But I'm not sure they moved ahead of Anaheim.
I'm not sure they have either, but I think when you look at, they have probably improved their team more than anyone in the West. And some of his other significant competitors lost key guys with retirement. So, right.
Well, he lost a couple, too.
Well, but I think he said when you add Kessler... You know, the only question I have is Danny Heatley historically has not been a physical specimen. He has not spent the time on the bike in the gym doing the conditioning, from the stuff that I've studied on him. That's been the issue. So he's right. He's not making any money, and that's a very selfish, good way to get an old veteran to give you what you need out of him.
Yeah, and he moves to a team that has more offensive skill than Minnesota did.
Correct.
So he's going to be surrounded by guys who can make him a better offensive player. Yeah. I mean, he has that skill set. You know, you can't teach touch.
Right. Well, the issue at the end of the day is he doesn't have to be an A player. He needs to be a very good B player.
Yeah, but if you put Heatley on the first line in Anaheim, would you be surprised if he scored 30 goals? I wouldn't.
I would not be surprised.
I mean, he scored 12 last year. But right. I wouldn't be surprised if he got 30.
I agree.
Just cleaning up everybody else's mess, right? Yep. Maybe that's the upside. This probably is the best thing that could have happened to Danny Heatley.
Well, it's probably...
I don't know where else he goes where he gets an opportunity to play in this environment with a quality team, with guys that have the skill set to make him that guy again, at least for a brief period of time.
If Danny can score 30, it's probably going to work out good for everybody.
For everybody. 27 before the hour. We'll come back and chat some more. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Team before the hour with the coach Butch Carter and Bob McCowan. So you're heading down to Vegas for some business and some summer league looking around. I've never been a big summer league guy. I never really understood what the upside was with it. And I found myself watching more of it this year. I don't know why. And still confused by it all. And the truth is that the Summer League is dominated by, guys who've just been drafted, maybe a handful of second-year players.
Correct.
And then a whole whack of free agents.
Yes,
a
whole whack of guys who are going to be from...
D-League guys, D-League, guys who are free agents.
European players.
Right.
Right.
All just trying, trying to get a look.
Trying to get a look to get back in the league.
Did you ever, when you were coaching, did you ever see a guy in the summer league and say, yeah, he's pretty good, let's give him a shot?
Well, the only guy I ever wanted out of summer league was Ben Wallace.
Ben Wallace had to be under contract.
No, remember Ben Wallace, he played at Virginia Union, same school as Charles Oakley. Right.
Yeah. So give me his history. I don't know it.
He was when I seen him in the summer league, we went to California because before it used to be the California Summer League,
right,
before it was the Vegas Summer League.
Right.
And so, you know, my measuring stick is
he was undrafted?
Undrafted. So I'm looking for pure athlete.
That.
Right? Yeah. And all of a sudden, this guy is grabbing every rebound. And the biggest deficiency when I got here with Toronto Raptors was could not rebound. So, you know, I went back and argued, tried to meet with his agent. Glenn finally got to his agent. And everyone on our side said, no, the guy can't shoot. I said, I don't care if he can't shoot. He grabs every rebound, right? As far as energy through space, he was like the number one guy I'd seen. And internally, our group, I think, you know, they bushwhacked me with Glenn on it. But he was absolutely the one player we missed on that we should have had, because we definitely could have used him. And but that's, you know, and I'm not an advocate of summer league. Never have.
That's been a lot of years of summer league, and one guy comes to mind, right?
That's correct. I'm not an advocate of summer league. I think that summer league is a tool that's there for all the personnel people to say, you know, we've seen these guys, because it's very important that a guy doesn't come up through the system that they say they haven't seen. So,
I guess.
So driving everybody, all the cattle, you know.
Yeah, into 1 yard.
Into 1 yard, right?
I get that sort of.
So that's what the summer league is, because in reality, you bring guys in for 2 days or 3 days and they practice, and then how much of that are they going to retain?
We were talking during the break about what I perceive to be a flaw in the system. And the flaw is this. Under the current system, if you're you've completed your freshman year at college, you can declare for the draft. And of course, we focus on all the big names. Here are the guys that are going to be at the top of the draft pool. And then we wade our way through two rounds. And the truth is there's only two rounds. And really, the NBA doesn't need more than two rounds because there's not enough room for even the players that are drafted. But nobody talks about those guys that declared and then aren't drafted. And you're seeing a lot of them at the summer league.
That's correct.
And they're the vast majority of them are going to wind up playing in the D League or in Europe or driving a truck.
That's correct.
So it seems to me to be an extraordinary punishment to ask a 19-year-old kid to make a determination as to whether he thinks he's good enough to get drafted and then come out. And the punishment is too severe, because the punishment is, if you do this and don't get drafted, you can't go back to school.
Bob, you're absolutely correct. They're treated like lepers. And the reality is that if we wanted to help them make the best decision, they should have the opportunity, if they don't get drafted, to go back to school.
And isn't that good for the school? And in essence, and good for the NCAA and good for the fan base of that school? Because I know in the years that I was in Vegas and watched UNLV play, you know, Tark would get a bunch of JC guys, yeah. So we knew we were only going to have him for 2 years.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, he'd get a kid who came in as a freshman, and we got to keep him for 4 years. Well, if you're a fan of any major school now, you've come to the realization, hey, I love star players, but if I get one, I'm only seeing him for 1 year.
That's correct.
I can't follow him. I can't see the team build around this guy anymore. They're gone. And in that group are a bunch of kids who think they can get drafted, are convinced by others they can get drafted, wind up not being taken, and almost all of them, we never hear of them again.
Totally.
It's the last we've heard of them.
Yes.
No second chance. It's over. How many of those kids, if they went back to school under good coaching in a college environment with maturity, coming out, maybe if you don't get drafted, you can't come out again until, you know.
You graduate.
Until you graduate. It's not that bad, is it?
It makes a lot more sense because in basketball, you can stay in school until May because most schools are on semesters.
Right.
Right? So you'll be in good academic standing.
Yeah.
You're talking about 4 weeks at the most in July to go play basketball in the summer league and then have the ability to go back to school. And I think that leads to a lot better consistency for the coaches because it's got to be very, very hard to be a Division I coach, recruit a great player, and in 1 year he's gone. It has to be very, very tough.
Yeah, and the great ones, you're not going to be able to do anything about those because they're going to get drafted.
Right.
But that fringe guy who leaves, you know, maybe the guy who leaves the small school thinking, you know, I'm good enough, but then doesn't get drafted. Well, he's finished.
Well, he's finished. But more importantly, you're losing, a lot of times you're losing the third, fourth, and fifth starter on a very good basketball team.
Well, that's true too, yeah.
Right? And it's just those guys are very hard to replace because it takes time to get young men acclimated to the system. And they should be able to go out and test their wares. We basically have a system now where they're told they cannot test their wares against older players without a severe punitive penalty. And I agree with you. I think that it's a flaw in the system. It would be nice to see them corrected.
But it's an NCAA issue. It's not an NBA issue, right?
That's correct. But right now, when the NCAA is sitting in on a board of directors meeting with the NBA, that should have happened 25 years ago. But both of them, the NCAA always thought that they were bigger, more powerful. And now that they're learning that these kids and these and other institutions are hiring lawyers to say, your form of amateurism is incorrect. It is
unlawful.
Totally unlawful. And they're being attacked on all fronts by very, very bright people. So,
this opens the door for a correction.
I hope it opens the door for it because the reality is that the coaches whose lives and families' lives depend on them being successful should be able to keep or have the kids come back as much as possible so that they have a chance to be consistent. And right now, this allows them a great chance to be consistent because guys are leaving and they shouldn't leave.
1 minute. If I sit down tonight in front of the TV, turn on NBA television, and watch a summer league game, what the hell should I be looking for? What do you look for?
I'm looking for...
What interests you in this?
I'm looking for... great athleticism.
But am I looking, should I only be looking at guys like Wiggins and drafted players
yes.
and stars?
Yes.
Like the rest of them, forget about it. I don't care how good they look, they
Correct.
Ain't going anywhere.
Because when they put the men out there, as I told someone last night, see if when they're in the lane, when they jump, if they release the basketball above the rim, if they don't release the basketball above the rim,
it's getting eaten.
They're going to get eaten alive. So yeah. Don't even waste your time.
You're going to be back for an hour tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
It's Coach Butch Carter. Our thanks to Bob Ryan and Bruce Boudreau for joining us. Have a nice evening. See you tomorrow.